Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Monica Brain. It's the last show of 2017. Today we'll discuss some of the biggest Native news stories of the year and take a look at what might be coming up in 2018. What do you think are the biggest Native news stories in 2017? Was it oil going through the Dakota Access Pipeline? Other issues affecting Indian Country included healthcare reform, wildfires, and the closure of Indian Country Today Media Network. What's on your list? Call us at 1-800-996-2848 to share. We're back right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. This week marks the Wounded Knee Massacre, where hundreds of Lakota people were killed by U.S. soldiers in the 1800s. Proposed plans for land near the site and graves in South Dakota have upset some people, as Jim Kent reports.
Rapid City newspaper publisher Tim Gallego plans to develop land near the 1890 Wounded Knee Massacre site and mass grave. Gallego has presented a proposal to develop the area as a tourist attraction that would include a museum, a Lakota Arts and Crafts Center, a trading post, and a campground. He also wants to erect what he calls a proper memorial at the mass grave, but some people are not happy with the plans. L'Oreal Blackshaw is spokesperson for the 1890 Wounded Knee Massacre Descendants Society on the Pine Ridge Reservation. Blackshaw says she understands the need for economic development on Pine Ridge, but not at the site of a massacre.
Using such a sacred site for profit, that is just beyond my comprehension, because I was taught respect. To respect that place is to leave it be.
Blackshaw adds that Gallego's failure to consult with and gain approval from the families of those who were at Wounded Knee goes against Lakota traditions on consensus. Tim Gallego, an Oglala tribal member, did not respond to a request for an interview to discuss his proposal for developing Wounded Knee. I'm Jim Kent.
In January, we're wrapping up our USC Annenberg Center for Health Journalism series. We're revisiting some of our reporting, including how technology is playing a role in health and wellness efforts.
A video on YouTube teaches powwow-style dance moves to encourage people to get active.
People can use technology to find encouragement, track their workouts, meals, and other daily activities, all in an effort to boost overall health and achieve wellness goals. Waylon Pahona is a fitness trainer in Arizona. He travels around Indian Country sharing his fitness story. In 2012, he created the Facebook group Healthy Active Natives.
It's hard to get people to come in and exercise. A lot of issues on the reservation with drugs, alcohol, pregnancy, you know, with youth. How do I bridge that gap? Well, I basically just started sharing and talking about my life.
And it's not just online support groups. The United National Indian Tribal Youth Organization created an app with Native culture in mind.
And you can click the wellness tracker so that you can see.
Joshua So is the project coordinator for Unity's Wellness Warriors program.
When a lot of people hear the words wellness, they automatically think of physical fitness. A lot of times we will forget about the other aspects of wellness, which would include social aspects, mental, spiritual, emotional. Every day, you don't feel great physically every day, but you also don't feel the same socially, mentally. So every day you're essentially a different person, and wellness is something that's an everyday approach.
The app was designed for Native youth. Users can track fitness activities like Native dance and healthy eating. There's also a section to upload photos and recipes for traditional foods.
The difference of how we approach wellness is that it's a balanced life, and that's where our traditional teachings come into play.
Lauren Ashley Buford is the Wellness Warriors project manager. She says the incorporation of indigenous values sets their app apart from others on the market.
This tool is just a way for them to communicate on a private level, but then feel supported that they're not alone.
The popularity and availability of health and fitness apps may provide opportunities for free or low-cost resources, but health experts and fitness coaches recommend people should consult their doctors for health care and a certified nutritionist for dietary advice. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Now
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by AARP, creating and connecting you to unique tools and content like Native Origins, incorporating Native American culture with recipes inspired by indigenous foods. More at aarp.org/Native Origins. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain. Before we usher in 2018, we're going to take the hour to look back at some of the major news events in Native America. Today, we'll reflect on the past year and the news stories that affected Indian country. Healthcare reform remains a big topic this year. Republicans tried several times to repeal the Affordable Care Act. They managed to dismantle some pieces of it, including the individual mandate. But what does this mean for you? Also, California wildfires affected several tribes. We'll talk with one reporter who's covering the fires. Ongoing environmental fights continued this year, like Bears Ears National Monument, drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, the Pebble Mine, the Back 40 Mine, Keystone XL, Enbridge Line 3, and the Dakota Access Pipeline. Also, the Tax Cut and Jobs Act was passed recently, creating massive tax cuts for wealthy businesses and some middle-income folks. But will it affect Native America? We lost a major Native news outlet, Indian Country Today. The future of the network is not clear, but it created an opportunity for a discussion about the value of Native media. And of course, President Trump continued to use the name Pocahontas to insult Senator Elizabeth Warren. The most recent was at an event for Code Talkers at the White House. What do you think are the biggest Native news stories of 2017? And what do you think should have gotten more attention? Call us and share. Our phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us now on the line is Deborah Utasia Kroll. She's an independent journalist and she is Halone. Welcome back, Deb.
Hi, welcome, and thanks for having me on again, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Deb. Also joining us here in the studio is Mark Trahant of Trahant Reports and the Native Voice One Weekly Commentary. And Mark is Shoshone Bannock. Welcome back to the show, and welcome to the studio, Mark.
Thank you. It's always a delight to be here, especially in person.
Yes, absolutely. All right, news 2017. Let's start with you, Mark. Healthcare's got to be the number one on your list, I imagine.
Right. In fact, I cringe whenever I hear healthcare reform because it's really healthcare destruction.
Right.
First, to set the stage, you really have to give credit to the Affordable Care Act. In two centuries, everybody on both sides of the aisle talk about the importance of treaty rights and how healthcare is a treaty right. Yet when it comes down to it, nobody's ever funded it. And for the first time, the Affordable Care Act said, this is how we're going to fund it. We're going to set up so the individuals will have insurance that will be paid for by the federal government, won't cost them anything, and that will fund the Indian Health Service. And you saw the budget start to creep up every year. Well, now they're trying to reverse all that. The big fight first was over Medicaid funding, which is extraordinarily important to Indian country. It's more than 70% of the kids in the program. And that fight, fortunately, Senators Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, and John McCain came together to take away a victory from the Republicans that wanted to do that. That said, the fight isn't over. The tax cut bill that you mentioned sets up another fight over health care, and it's going to be over dollars, and Medicaid will definitely be in the sights.
Do you think when President Obama, when they went to put together the Affordable Care Act, though, that there was like specific idea that the Affordable Care Act would fund the trust responsibility for health care?
Absolutely. The senator from Montana was the key author of that bill, and he definitely was aware of that. and it was something that they were thinking about. I mean, again, no Congress, no Democrat, no Republican has ever in the history of this country fully funded Indian Health Service. And they said, what would it take to do that? And it wasn't perfect, but it was good.
We're talking about the top Native news stories of the year. If you want to get in on this conversation, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Was healthcare at the top of your list? Were you concerned about the possible repeal of the Affordable Care Act? Or were you happy to see some changes made to it? All opinions are welcome on this conversation today. Again, it's 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Do you think, Mark, that we'll see some significant changes maybe to IHS this coming year as a result of changes to the Affordable Care Act? Is a repeal actually going to finally happen in 2018?
Well, I think it's less likely now than even 2 weeks ago. A new Democratic senator will be sworn in any day now from Alabama, which means the split will be 51-49, so they can only lose two votes to make something happen. They also would have to do it through a process called reconciliation, which means it has to be specifically tied to the budget resolution. So I think it makes it really tough. That said, the real story of the Indian Health Service that I don't think has been reported very much is that it's very deliberately shifted from away from the federal government to tribal governments and nonprofits. And now 60% of the system is run by nonprofits. Some of them are just providing really excellent care and ought to be something we look at as models. Others still have challenges, but the direction has been, let's do this at home. Let's design a healthcare system that works for us.
Are you talking about like contract or 638 and things like that?
638. And in the last 10 years, the real growth is creating nonprofits to run it rather than tribal governments. That happened at Navajo and several other places, Alaska, where a specific organization has been created with its only purpose to deliver healthcare.
Do you think that that's, I mean, that sounds like something that Republicans would really like, you know, like less governmental control, more involvement with private organizations. Is that where we're headed in general?
I think it's complicated, but yeah, I can see you'd think Republicans would like it. They haven't really jumped on that. In fact, it's interesting to me that when you hear committee chairman talk about it in Washington, most of them are still clueless to the fact that it is tribally run. They still see this federal government agency that's running healthcare, and that just hasn't been the case for some time. Local control allows you to put priorities and to say this is what's really important to this community. One story about that is when the Alaska Native Medical Center was going this route, they surveyed everybody, and one of the first things from their surveys was that people said, we wait too long. We sit there all day, and it wipes out everything we're trying to do for that day. So when they designed the waiting rooms, they designed it for people to get in and get out. And that's an idea of saying, look, this is what people locally want. Let's make it work.
Did they take the chairs out of the waiting rooms?
No, but they made them smaller and multiple, and you meet with your team quicker. In fact, there are signs there that I love, and the signs say, if you've been here longer than 15 minutes, something's not right. Talk to us.
I love that, too. Well, we are talking about the top 2017 news stories today. If you want to get in on the conversation, phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Mark Trahant from Trahant Reports is here with us in the studio. Deb Kroll is on the line with us. And Deb, what were some of the things, what was the top thing on your list of 2017 Native news stories?
Well, definitely Bears Ears is leading the list. That was a very surprise move on Trump's part. There was a lot of people very, very upset. It's basically decimated the size of two major national monuments that were established by President Obama, Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante, both of which contain a multiple number of very strong culturally relevant sites to Native people. The other thing that was unique about these two monuments was that tribes had actually had a seat at the table in managing those monuments, and that too has been removed. That that's a pretty big deal. I know that, you know, of course, the lawsuits immediately followed, and we'll have to see what happens. But it's definitely a big move. You have to excuse me. I'm just me over the flu.
No, it's fine. You know, Deb, the thing about Bears Ears that I think is really interesting is that, you know, there was a lot of discussion coming up to the designating it as a national monument. And there was some opposition to in the local area in Utah, definitely. There were, you know, people near Bears Ears who were speaking out against it. The commissioner of San Juan County has been very vocal about opposing Bears Ears as a national monument. And one of the things that I was thinking about with the coverage of it is that there are several tribes that are part of a coalition that are speaking, you know, that are were in support of this national monument. But then you also have these other contingent of individuals, many of them Native, who did not support the national monument. And how you present that as both, you know, like we have both sides here in your coverage. Did you think much about that and, you know, whether or not the situation was equally balanced?
According to I spoke with several people up there in the area. I was not able to get hold of Rebecca Benally, who's the San Juan County Commissioner. She refused to return any of my calls or emails or, including to her personal cell phone, which her secretary was nice enough to give me. She did issue a statement that she was thankful for the action to remove most of the monument. However, a lot of the other people who are not living in the NS chapter, which is the one that supposedly is opposing the monument action, were telling me that there's just a core group of maybe 10 people who are very vocal and in their opposition to the monument. So I'm kind of thinking that it might very well be that you have some very, very vocal people who've managed to get hold of the PR aspect, and they're kind of drowning out the voices of the many, many people who were for the monument. Now, that said, there is a case to be made that once a national monument has been established, you have to follow the federal government's rules on that land. But with the tribes actually being part of the management team, a lot of those concerns should have been dealt with. In fact, that there was still going to be traditional gathering, traditional journeying to the lands allowed, and that was not going to be a problem. So...
And
the other thing is, I'm sorry, the other thing is, I'll wait, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that I believe that there has been some discussion, though, about management, co-management and things like that, and that there was some suggestion that it wasn't entirely removed, but that there would be like discussions about it after the monument was shrunk.
Yes. Yes, there will be some discussions on it, but with so much of it being shrunk and so many of the cultural sites being demonumentized, if that's an actual verb.
That's a new one.
If they're going to be removed from that extra protection. And this is the other thing people have to remember, that some of the most vocal opposition came from the town of Blanding, Utah. Now, Blanding should be familiar to people because that was the town that we had more than 20 residents convicted of years of stealing and selling more than 40,000 artifacts from those lands. It was considered one of the biggest, if not the biggest, long-term theft of artifacts in the country's history. So that kind of puts things in a little bit different perspective, that the people who were making money off of stealing from cultural sites and grave robbing, so to speak, are the ones opposed to it having some extra protection. I think that might put a little extra thought into why they're opposing it.
Did Bears Ears make your list of top news stories? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Mark, any thoughts on Bears Ears?
Sure. I think if you pull back, there are two competing narratives. One narrative is this idea in the West that the federal government is this huge landlord that doesn't get it, that doesn't understand how to build coalitions and how to work with local communities. And that's true on everything from water usage to national monuments. The second one, and I think it's more complex, is that we've entered a phase where the rest of the world is talking about climate and energy in a new context, and the United States doesn't want to have that conversation. And so there's a tension there that I think plays out. What's going to be really interesting in Bears Ears and in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, which is similar in the, it's in the tax bill legislation, is whether or not oil companies actually want to develop that because this change is going on in the greater society.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of discussion about what you're talking about, this sort of narrative of like big government taking over the land and things like that. And yet we find major environmental organizations getting involved, and they are sounding the alarm, saying oil and gas development is absolutely, this is all about oil and gas development when it comes to Bears Ears. And then you have a politician saying, no, it's not. It absolutely isn't. And so how do you present that when you are sort of analyzing this and putting it out there for as a news story, like one or the other or somewhere in between?
Well, it's even more complicated than one or the other or in between, because yeah. On one hand, you have states and local communities saying the federal government doesn't get it. On the other hand, you have this is not about oil. And on the other hand, you have oil companies saying, yeah, I'm not sure we're going to do this. I mean, the price of oil is not what it was, and it's probably not ever going to be again. This is a really interesting time. And part of it is millennials. Millennials don't drive like their previous generations did. And that's changing everything. So one of my favorite statistics is first day driver's license. And when I turned 16, and we won't say when because it was when cars were barely mechanical.
When you cranked them.
Right. But when I turned 16, first day I'm down there getting a driver's license. Today, 16-year-olds, yeah, maybe. I'll get down there. Whenever. Okay. Yeah. And you see that reflected in number of miles driven across a day, a year. I mean, it's just a real shift in people's thinking about how we access energy. And I think that's only going to exacerbate.
What do you think? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Deb, anything else about Bears Ears? Do you think that the fact that this may have be about oil and gas development was overshadowed in the media or was clearly covered?
I didn't really see too much about oil and gas in the coverage. You know, we do know that there's a lot of resources in there. It's definitely something that bears watching. But what the people that I had talked to were a lot more concerned with protecting the cultural sites than they were with oil and gas exploration. But that's still a big factor, and I think we definitely need continue to keep an eye on it, especially since the tax bill apparently also has authorized drilling in the Alaska refuge up north. So,
Yeah. I mean, we should talk about that. I know that this is another situation where there are multiple sides to this issue, and there are Native folks who are in support of this drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Mark, why did they have to put it into a tax bill, though?
Because they didn't have the votes. I mean, it's bottom line, they didn't have the votes. They were using Lisa Murkowski has been trying to do this for years. What's fascinating to me is that she was such a staunch advocate on health care, except when it came to this issue, she was willing to give that up, which she did for that vote. It is complicated. And again, one thing I would watch going forward is whether oil companies actually are going to develop that, whether there's the market to do it, and whether they're going to be able to make enough to pay the cost of that development. We are in a really interesting time. Lisa Murkowski gave at the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention this year an eloquent speech on climate change and talked about how Alaska is at the forefront, how if you're looking at, if you want to see it in action, this is where to go. And yet she's pushing for this development. And it was interesting in the hearings, and I listened to the entire line, she was very careful to talk about how they wouldn't impact the environment and it wouldn't impact, say, caribou herds, but she never talked about climate change and what this means for the bigger issue. And I thought that was fascinating.
I mean, is it possible, though, that that is just too much of a leap to be able to draw connections between drilling in the Arctic? I mean, we need oil. We run this studio on oil. We run, you know, many of our things in our lives are a result of oil and gas. And so being able to draw that connection and say whether or not drilling is directly connecting to climate change maybe really isn't happening right now. I mean, we have the president tweeting that, you know, it's cold, and
right,
therefore climate change is not happening.
Well, weather and climate are different. I have to tell him one of these days. It's absolutely true that we need oil. And really what we're talking about is what kind of transition are we going to make? Are we going to add to our problem and grow fossil fuel development, which is what the administration wants to do? Or are we going to start to turn back the dial? And where do you turn back the dial? And one argument is you turn back the dial on the most costly projects, you turn back the dial on those that are the dirtiest, you turn back the dial on things that require great, what the United Nations calls significant infrastructure. And Alaska would be one of those significant infrastructure projects.
Drilling in the Arctic Wildlife right. Refuge. Well, we want to hear from you. What do you think were the top news stories of 2017, Native news stories? What made your list? Was bear's ears on your list? What about the fires in California? Did they affect you? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Mark, we're just about to go to a break. One of the things that I heard folks talking about this year was wanting to just sort of turn off the news, feeling a little exhausted by everything that was going on.
I thought it was interesting that the number one word this year to describe last year, or the number one word to describe the last year, is chaotic.
Yeah, chaotic. I mean, is there something to be said about taking a news break or, you know, being able to sort of reel it back a bit?
I would argue the opposite. It's more important now to be completely informed and to develop your thoughts. I'll tell you one thing, though, and I think this is really important for Indian Country, is we need to pay attention to things that we disagree with. And we need to learn from those arguments and not just listen to an echo chamber.
Absolutely. I cannot agree with you more on that. All opinions are welcome here on Native America Calling. We'd love to hear from you. What were the top news stories, Native news stories in 2017? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We're going to go to a short break, but after the break, we'll talk more about what happened in 2017. We'll be right back. Some people spend years perfecting their bowling game and striving for a perfect 300. At the same time, just about anybody can have fun for the first time in a bowling alley. The sport has a significant Native American following with Native leagues and major tournaments with big cash payouts. Join us for the next Native America Calling as we explore the world of Native bowling.
Now we are on. Buju, dejikan mino ayawin gabe bibun. Dangi gwenenege nongam, ganoj 1-800-318-2596, gema mawidishuin go.cms.gov/native health. Gaundin agadeg the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Miigwech.
Support for this program by the Heard Museum, hosting the 28th Annual Hoop Dance World Championships, where you can see more than 70 talented native hoop dancers combine artistry, sheer athleticism, and cultural traditions to create an exciting, colorful, and suspenseful competition as they vie for the championship title. February 10th and 11th at the Heard Museum in Phoenix, Arizona. Details at heard.org.
Welcome back. You are listening to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain. Today is our monthly news roundup. Mark Trahant is with us here in Studio 49. You can catch his political analysis on TrahantReports.com. Also, Deborah Utasia-Kroll is an independent journalist, and she is with us on the line. I want to give a shout out to KTBP on the Fort Peck Assiniboine Sioux Reservation. Our show is on many great radio stations across the U.S. What do you think were the biggest Native news stories of 2017? Call us right now with your thoughts. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go to Tanya in Santa Fe, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Hey there, Tanya. What are you thinking?
Well, since the administration's taken power, it seems like they're dismantling everything but the left values. So it's been kind of terrifying to put the radio on each day or read the news. I would definitely say the wilderness areas have just been a huge hit for me. One of the reasons, I'm from Australia, and I moved to America because I fell in love with the landscape. And just to see in the last 20 years, just the eyesore destruction of gas and the fracking that's happening across the land. And I live in New Mexico, but, you know, I travel to Utah. I love to go to wilderness areas. So it's been really devastating and just so upsetting. And then last thing, too, you know, one thing we don't look at is that in the last 40 years, we've lost more than 50% of the wild mammals across the planet. So it never seems to be part of the equation, like to actually protect these lands for the other species. So I just wanted to put my two cents in there.
Tanya, thanks so much for giving us a call from Santa Fe, tuned in on KUNM. Let's take one more call. We've got Joyce in Wounded Knee, South Dakota, tuned in on Keeley. Hey there, Joyce.
Good morning, good afternoon, wherever in the world you hear me. But I am very grateful to express my thought concerning this, because it has always been around here on the Pine Ridge Reservation, where IHS has not really adequately taken care of our needs as a people. And there are many parts to health care, and it surely some of them are very good to us, so to speak, but there are parts of it that does not take care of us, meaning financially or even medically.
Yeah,
many parts do not help us in our need, and therefore I think it needs to be restructured to be able to cover all of the Native American nation's needs.
Joyce, thanks so much for sharing your opinion, giving us a call from Wounded Knee, South Dakota, tuned in on KILI. And what do you think were the biggest news stories for you this year? Phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. Mark, any thoughts?
Sure. We talk a lot about the disparity between Indians and non-Indians on health, and it's certainly a continuing problem that has to be resolved. That said, there's also a disparity within the Indian health system, and the Dakotas, unfortunately, are on the lower end of that. And that's something that absolutely, I think if it were up to me, the Indian Health Service would have a special team that would do nothing but to improve the quality of service, particularly in the Dakotas.
Absolutely. Deb, one of the things that we mentioned in the intro that we want to talk a little bit about that you covered were the California fires. Anything that you can give sort of an update or anything that you'd like to share about them and how they affected tribes?
Well, we do know that there were some homes lost directly on rancherias. The majority of homes lost were people who don't actually live on the rancherias, like in Santa Rosa and some of the other areas. So they're continuing to recover from that. But it's you know, we're in the long recovery period, and it as Moak Simon, who's the chairman of Middletown Rancheria, who was affected by a fire a few years ago, says that you know, it's going to take years to recover. Right now, one thing that they're doing is they're actually collecting acorns to replant oak trees that were lost. Yeah, you know, our oak trees are very important to California people for a number of reasons. Because there's 28 tribal cultures in California that collectively are called the acorn people. So we would like to get the oak trees put back. And so they're collecting in that effort. Another thing that they're talking about is that 150 years of mismanagement of the lands are a proximate cause of these big, huge, destructive fires that, as we all know in pre-contact times, California tribes actively managed the lands and what they call the fire mosaic. You know, they would set fires in different parts of their lands on a periodic basis to burn off the dead brush and to stimulate the growth of beneficial plants for basketry, for grass, for animals, and to prevent these big, massive fires. And although I didn't get it into the article, some of the tribal leaders I spoke with were very, very concerned that this continual move towards not managing the lands has been a big cause of these fires. Of course, we also know that California was in a historic drought, followed by a winter time, a very, very wet winter, which of course stimulated the growth of grass and other plants. And then we had another dry summer, which of course contributed to the fires. It looks like at least one of the causes of the fires was high winds knocking down electric poles, which, of course, you know, sparked the fires. We have the comment from Robert Geary over at Elam, which is at the east end of Clear Lake, and he was saying that the winds were so hard that the live wires and transformers were striking the ground.
Wow. That's incredible.
Excuse me.
No, it's fine. You know, before the break, we were talking a little bit about climate change and the connection, you know, particularly oil and gas development. Mark, what do you think about drawing a connection between climate change and the fires in California?
I think they're absolutely connected. You look at the average temperature in California, and it's increased. I think it's 2 degrees. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but it's significant. And the second thing from California that I think is just a prequel to what we're going to see across the globe is climate change refugees, where people are actually, the climate is changing so dramatically and causing so much more damage than before that people are moving, both domestically and internationally. And all of the science tells us that the fires are going to get worse in the future. Hurricanes are going to get worse. And this is just the beginning of a really big change in global patterns.
Deb, I know, you know, for folks who are in it right there, I mean, is there much discussion or did you talk with the tribal members about how this is connected to climate change, or is it something that's just too devastating to think about at the moment?
It's definitely connected to climate change. And a lot of the elders were talking about how the the land is changing, the vegetation is changing. Where we used to have mixed forests, we now have mainly chaparral and something called yerba santa, which are basically weed species. They come in and, you know, grow when nothing else will grow. And so they're definitely seeing a change in the land. They're seeing a change in the overall climate. And the other thing they're telling me is because they see these changes, it's become even more important to start active management again of the lands to prevent more of these. And, of course, as Mark says, we're just going to continue to have more of these fires. So a lot of the tribal leaders are saying that they're having meetings now on how they can be a little more proactive in preventing the next one coming. And the climate refugees that he was talking about, you see this a lot in those three counties because California is experiencing a housing crisis anyways with prices just jumping through the roof. And a lot of the people who had very modest means who were living in trailers and you know, modest houses in the area and who had no insurance, and even sometimes if they do have insurance, are not able to find another place to live because Sonoma and Mendocino counties are basically pricing people out.
That's really,
and that's not just Native people. It's pretty much everyone there.
Right. Definitely. So it's like a multiple things coming together are creating, a really devastating situation in that area. I want to add a few more stories, top news stories from 2017 to the discussion. One of the big ones that we've talked about the past on this show is that Indian Country Today Media Network announced that it was going on hiatus. And Mark, you've got some information about this. Can you share a little bit about like what happened and what's going on with that?
Sure. Well, I can't tell you what happened because I wasn't involved with Indian Country Today Media Network. But since then, they've donated the property to the National Congress of American Indians. We had a meeting at the NCAI in Wisconsin in October and talked about some of the options. One of the things that was suggested at that meeting was to make sure it stays live. And the Oneida Nation followed up and basically through the end of January, I have a person that's posting new material, so it's not a dormant site, which I think is a good thing because you don't want to lose that brand. The second thing is next month there will be another series of meetings about what to do with it. I think it's a solvable problem. NCAI is a political institution, of course, and it's always tricky about how a political institution operates a news organization.
Yeah.
That said, that's the standard in the world. The idea of a corporation doing it is really an American idea. Everywhere else in the world, crown corporations handle this all the time. So it's really an idea of how do you protect the integrity of the copy and the journalism. And I think something that NCAI is paying a lot of attention to. Then there's the challenge of how big it's going to be. I don't think it'll be the size it was, just because it's a lot of money to raise. But I do think that there's a way to get a pretty substantial journalism product out of this.
And, I'm curious, though, what happens when, something happens at NCAI and it needs to be covered? How do you navigate through something like that?
Well, ideally, you have some kind of firewall where there's whether it be a board or some kind of organization. I mean, with the British Broadcasting Corporation, for example, the government's not allowed to do anything involved with content. And in fact, their funding cycles run every other year so that they can't even punish them right away with the budget. And I think that would be a good way. Yeah, there's a lot of nonprofits that do journalism today. The Center for, I'm trying to remember the name, but they do, there's several both left and right organizations that have journalism institutions that have their own newsroom and they're completely independent. And I think that's kind of the mechanism.
We're talking about Native news stories today. There's still time if you want to get in on the conversation. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Mark, any other major stories that you think that we should be paying attention to?
Well, one coming out of Indian country today, and maybe I'll just raise it, is a new television program that we're working on.
Oh, right, of course.
And we picked one of the most storied names in journalism to do that, and it's going to be called Wasaha. And it'll be out in the first quarter, an hour news magazine similar to 60 Minutes or something like that. I just got back from the island of Dominica, another area hit really hard by climate change and hurricanes. And it's interesting, the Kalinago people, which is where we were at, were the first tribe to encounter Columbus. And the island is very mountainous, very difficult to get into. And when Columbus's ship sailed there, the volley of arrows was so intense that he gave up and never landed on the island.
Oh, interesting.
It's one of the islands he never made. And they also have these arrows that they used kind of the original germ warfare. They coated the arrows in a resin from the trees, and when they hit a person, they burn. And
wow.
The Spanish troops hated those so much that they didn't go back. Wasaha was the name of a publication started by Carlos Montezuma in the 1920s, and then again in the 1970s by Rupert and Janet Costo in San Francisco. So we wanted to use a name that really called this really great legacy of Native journalism. And hopefully the stories we tell will live up to that ideal.
And what does it mean, Wasaha?
Let my people know is what Montezuma used to say.
All right. And Deb, anything else you want to share about future of Native media or anything like that?
Well, I was gonna mention that we do have a really strong working example of a semi-political organization, and that would be Kaiser Health News, which kind of grew out of the Kaiser Health Foundation, but it's become its own entity now, and it's a pretty robust website that you know deals in health news, and I'm thinking that would be a good example for NCAI to follow.
Yeah, I like it because they have a firewall between. When I first heard of Kaiser Health News, I thought, oh, I don't want to hear from the insurance companies. But
I have to jump in there.
Yeah,
so
go
this
ahead,
is where
Mark.
It gets complicated. It's the same Kaiser, but it's not the same Kaiser.
Oh, okay.
The guy who started Kaiser Health Insurance and also Kaiser Jeeps started both.
Okay.
But they're completely independent. This is from the Kaiser Family Foundation,
right,
which is only a funder of health issues.
Yeah, exactly, which is why, you know, you can trust that source as a good information to get, especially they've done a number of coverage of Indian country and the effects of the Affordable Care Act and things like that. All right, well, I want to add one more story to our conversation today. Let's hear a little bit about efforts to rebuild a Native village destroyed by the Park Service in Yosemite National Park. On the line with us now is Carmen George. She's a reporter for the Fresno Bee. Welcome, Carmen.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us a little bit about the story of this village that is being rebuilt in Yosemite National Park.
Yeah, I would love to. So the project is being organized by a group of Native American people under the umbrella of the American Indian Council of Mariposa County, which is also known as the Southern Sierra Miwok Nation. And they're basically rebuilding their last Native American village site in Yosemite Valley, which was destroyed by the Park Service by 1969. And the most amazing part of working on this for me was just being able to speak with so many Native elders who actually lived in this last village, you know, who recall seeing their mothers and their grandmothers still using, you know, grinding holes on boulders to mash, you know, Native plants for cooking the way their ancestors probably would have been doing for the last 7,000 years in Yosemite Valley. So the village is being called Wahoga, which is a Miwok word for village. And it really honors, I think, a rich history of Native peoples in Yosemite. The Park Service today officially recognizes like 7 tribes as having traditional ties to the park. And these Native people still regularly hold spiritual walks and camps and dances in Yosemite. And this project also, I think, really sheds some important light on a part of history that's often forgotten that Yosemite visitors don't know. Yosemite was, quote-unquote, discovered in the mid-1800s by a band of California state militia while they were hunting for Native Americans believed to be living in this mountain stronghold. And at that time when they came into Yosemite, you know, villages were burned and Native American people were shot and hung and captured, and others fled to the foothills or the Eastern Sierra. And so I see this project also as, you know, an, kind of an act of redemption and healing too.
And when you say that they're rebuilding the village, what exactly will that look like?
Yeah, so the last site was a cluster of 15 small cabins, and those are going to be replaced by more traditional structures called umachas, which are essentially like cedar-sided little teepee-looking structures. And they'll also have a large traditional roundhouse and a sweat lodge. And they hope maybe down the line they'll be able to actually have a more modern facility too, where they could do more educational kind of lessons with visitors before they walk into the village. So it's an exciting project. It seems like, you know, the Park Service and the Native people both are working well together now. And there's been kind of a lot of start and stops on this project in recent years. So it seems like now it's kind of getting going again. They actually had started construction originally in 2009, and it had been underway for about 2 years. And then a new superintendent came in 2011 and was concerned about the safety of the structures. And they kind of had to go back to the drawing board, and they got some Native American engineers to kind of help do some structural analysis. And that was approved, and then construction started again last year. So they're currently waiting on the last, finalizing the last agreement, which would allow construction to continue in the spring. But both sides seem to be optimistic that that is going to be happening soon. So,
and what have tribal members shared with you about how they feel about something like this, you know, coming out of such a terrible history?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing I heard over and over again was how much this would be something for them where they could share, pass on their culture to the younger generations, and that was the most important thing to them. And so I think now a lot of the people working on this project really feel a sense of urgency even more so than they did before. So a lot of these people are, you know, in their 80s and their 90s, and, you know, it would be a real dream, I think, to be able to kind of come home in a way to this place. And, you know, my favorite part of, I think, all the quotes I gathered for the story was listening to this one Miwok and Paiute elder looking out across the roundhouse, and he had noticed this these deer tracks that had gone through the center of the roundhouse. And he told me, wow, isn't that so cool that, you know, even though this deer, would it maybe be easier for this deer to go around this whole enclosed structure, he's still following the same path that he's been following for thousands of years. And that's kind of like us too. And I thought that was just really sweet and pretty fitting for what they're doing. So hopefully we'll see some more construction soon.
Well, Carmen, thanks so much for sharing this story with us. We'll put a link to your article on our website, nativeamericacalling.com. And we definitely love to hear in the future how things turn out.
Great. We'd love to share again. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Mark, anything you'd like to share as we wrap up today, maybe about what you're looking forward to in the coming year?
Well, I'm sitting here with a yellow pad in front of me, and it's got scribbles in every single direction. And I think that might actually be the same as the tax bill. Everything is a mess. It's going to unfold, and people are going to figure out what's in it, and it's going to be very complicated. A couple of things for Indian Country. One, they had an opportunity for the first time to start to treat tribes and states with the same tax status. They did not. They didn't even bring it up. Second, here's one good thing about it. For a lot of Native Americans, probably 60-70% of us, the standard deduction has been increased so much that we won't have to do anything with federal taxes. It'll just be one write-off and you're done. That's the good part. The really scary part of this bill is it's going to put pressure on the federal budget in ways we haven't seen before. It's going to be the sequester times 10 in terms of $1 trillion that just evaporated. And I think that's going to put pressure on programs that we care about that serve a lot of Native people.
I mean, is there a possibility to cut spending in areas that, you know, I mean, there's a lot of discussion about like too much spending and fat and things like that, where that don't affect, you know, the most vulnerable in our society.
That would be the ideal, but it's not going to happen. Here's how the federal government breaks down the budget. Most of the federal budget is entitlement, and that would be Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare. It's on automatic pilot. There's nothing you can do about it. And that's by far the biggest. The second biggest is interest on the debt. Again, nothing you can do about it. The next biggest is the military. And right now there's kind of an agreement to peg the military to the domestic dependent spending. And they basically try to keep those in the same. Republicans want to separate that out and just have military be on its own and worry about domestic. The problem is there's not enough money to cut from domestic programs to balance everything else out. Yet that's where all the action is on this one really small part of the budget. And that's where Indian Country is, in that one small part of the budget.
So what do you think? We're going to see some painful cuts or just big fights?
I think we're going to see some nasty fights. I mean, one clue is they haven't even been able to pass a temporary budget. They keep doing two-week intervals. And that's because they don't have the votes in their own members. I mean, Republicans are just as divided as everybody else about what to do next.
You want to put your predictions in on a shutdown?
I think they'll keep doing 2 weeks intervals.
Well, that's an interesting way to run a massive government. Unfortunately, we have reached the end of our hour. Thanks so much to our guests, Mark Trahant, Deb Utasia-Kroll, and Carmen George from the Fresno Bee for sharing that story right at the end. We're back on Monday with a show about bowling. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Our host is Tara Gatewood. Our associate producer is Andy Murphy. Marina Spencer is our engineer. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm senior producer Monica Brain. Happy New Year.
In sexual violence.
There's nothing traditional about sexual violence. If you've been a victim of sexual violence, take the first step and tell someone. If you decide to report this crime to the police, your local shelter can help provide support services and ensure your case doesn't fall through the cracks. Join us in stopping sexual violence in our communities. Break the silence. Support provided by the Native American Community Board.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians working to improve health and safety policies and programs in K-12 schools with American Indian or Alaska Native enrollment over 50%. The School Health Index Self-Assessment and Planning Guide was developed to enable schools to identify strengths and weaknesses of health and safety policies, develop action plans for improving student and staff health, and engage teachers, parents, students, and the community in promoting health-enhancing behaviors and better health.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.